To my immediate right is Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities out of Champaign, Illinois. He's on our air every Wednesday morning on the pre-opening commodity market report at 8:50 Central Time. And Clayton, how bullish do you want to be?
I'm not real bullish. I'm trying to maintain a real solid objective viewpoint here. Am I here to make my opening comments?
You're here to make your opening comment.
All right. No question we're seeing maybe not unprecedented, but darn close to unprecedented volatility and emotions right now. And I don't think that's going to go away anytime soon. As such, I think it's really important, more important than ever, to really try to keep a cool head about you and try to avoid making emotional gut-wrenching, knee-jerk type reactions in your marketing. One way to avoid doing that, I think, is to not overtrade, and usually overtrade you're thinking in terms of a futures or options position, but no question that can certainly apply to overtrading in the cash market as well. I kind of shudder when I hear people, either farmers or analysts like in our position here, saying they either have or have recommended, you know, being, you know, 80% sold new crop corn because these prices are too great to resist or something like that. I mean, you just got to keep your wits about you and realize anything can happen, and I think it's probably an excellent time to kind of take baby steps in whatever you do. But speaking of the unprecedented volatility, I mean, every single sector that you look at in the market right now, it's over the top. Where you look at market fundamentals, the supply and demand, I mean, every aspect of that, whether acreage or weather, yield, demand side ethanol obviously is a huge question, all the uncertainty is over the top. On the non-market variables or inputs, you've got the funds activity, which is obviously a huge factor in the discovery process, price discovery process. The dollar's value, the economy in general, I mean, all these things are off the charts as far as volatility goes. So my point in saying all this is that the flat price generally it tries to digest degrees of uncertainty. And since we have almost unprecedented uncertainty right now, it kind of goes to show that you have, you know, extremely high option prices. I mean, the at-the-money December straddle in corn is something like over 80 cents right now. I mean, it's just amazing. But what is happening is this market, I think, in its price discovery efforts, it's trying to chew on all this and digest it and come up with a price. Well, what it's doing is it's building this risk premium for what might happen. And this happens countless times, you know, over the course of time. And that's why a lot of times you'll see a buy the rumor, sell the fact phenomenon. Whatever happens finally happens, and people think it'll be real bullish or real bearish, but the market goes the opposite direction because what has happened is the market has already digested the uncertainty but not necessarily the outcome. Well, I would just maybe say a word of caution here that we're digesting an awful lot in these markets right now. So it's very possible, unless something really off the charts happens, like a severe drought, but you got to remember that's an unlikely outcome, it's very possible that all this uncertainty has been factored into prices to a much larger degree than we might be led to believe. I wouldn't make the mistake of thinking that just because the funds come in there and over the course of 2 or 3 days buy 30,000 contracts of corn, it doesn't mean the situation is more bullish. It just means that they've put the pedal to the metal that much more. It has nothing to do with whether it's bullish or bearish fundamentally. It just means that they've gone out on a limb that much further, and that could easily be misinterpreted as saying, oh, it's even more bullish because they bought more. I don't think you can look at it that way. So I don't want to monopolize it. That's it for right now. Thank you.
Next to Clayton is Paul Cooley of 8M Investment Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Paul on our air every Wednesday morning during our opening market report at 9:50 Central Time and 2:06 in the afternoon during our closing market report. Paul, always good to see you. What do you have to say about the corn market?
Well, it's great to be here at Covington, Indiana, at the Beef House Restaurant. There's so many wonderful people out here today, and I want to say hi to you. And, of course, the program's going along very well. I twisted Dan Bassey's arm pretty hard and said there's one more chair at this table for you to speak this afternoon, and he had to zoom back to Chicago, obvious to vote. The other thing that I wanted to make sure everybody here is very well aware of is that, we are going through some very exciting times. I had a friend also that I wanted to share with you about old times. A lot of old times are being talked about today. And Thad Chapelio, a lot of you people remember him on The Weather with Merrill Lynch. He went to work for Louis Dreyfus as their private meteorologist, and now he's with a commodity fund trader that he gets up very early in the morning to let the funds know how the weather's going to be around the world. A couple things that I want to just go in the headlines is I'm a big believer that we're not going to see 12 million acres of corn. I think it'll be a real stretch if we get 10 million acres of corn. The previous record increase was like 3 million acre increase. Last August, crop production report was the largest production estimate that the U.S. government ever came up with, and it was a big whopping 152 bushels to the acre, and I about fell out of my chair onto the floor. But the market continued to beat that prediction pretty hard all the way into the final production estimate. There are pit bears out here that continue to talk about $47 a barrel crude oil, and I'll give that a pretty low grade as well. And a lot of people I hear and talk to is that this is only a one-year deal. I don't buy that argument at all. And you got to keep selling, 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 and my sources indicate me that the guys sold the 2.6 crop awful cheap, and they went in there and sold a lot of 2007 a lot of cheap, and they've also gone into 2008 as well. My take is that people have been rewarding this market very aggressively. Yes, it's very popular, even on Commodity Week to say we sold $8 beans and $4 corn, but there's been a lot of corn sold a lot cheaper and a lot of soybeans sold a lot cheaper. So I think that that's something we have to work on very closely. Some of the things that I do think, back in the old days, back before we had the commodity funds and these big market moves, we did have about three times the market the crop. In the last several years, they only gave you about one chance, and I think that's been one of the reasons why people have been so aggressive to pick up that big sale, collect your LDP, and play for the buyback possibly with the futures. Those days of playing the same old card game and the same old basketball game and the football game with a bunch of old game plays, you got to change, and you got to change quickly, or they're going to leave you in the dust. And, I just want to make that perfectly clear that this is a new era, and I don't believe it's just a one-shot little game, and I agree with Dan Bassey on that observation. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. Next to Paul is Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Pete is on our air every Tuesday morning during the pre-opening commodity market report at 8:50 Central Time. Pete, good seeing you, and an opening remark, please, sir.
Well, I think most it's been talked about already is volatility. Volatile, volatile, volatile. I think we could be $1.50 higher or $1.50 lower in corn in a three-week period, depending on what happens to whatever news we're looking for. So I think you need to be prepared for that. I would like to be 25 to 30% sold on new crop corn, cash for 07, and I'd like to have another 25, 30% covered with puts at this $4 and higher level. I know people started selling earlier. On beans, we made our first sales of beans this week at over $8 cash. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But on beans, depending on the acreage report, March 30th, you could see beans down $2 or beans up $4. So we got volatility, volatility. Are we going to have 5 million less acres of beans or 9 million acres less of beans? If you put 13% acreage increase on corn, you're at 10 million more acres of corn. If you grow that much more corn and have 150 bushel yield, we have a 12.9 crop. If we have a little bit higher yield at 155, we have a 13.3 billion crop. Dan Bassey talked about a 12.4 usage. If we continue to raise prices from here up, we're going to see some usage maybe stop or slow down. We could see usage go down by a half a billion or a billion. All of a sudden, you could have 2 billion carryout and a lot lower prices. So I think you need to protect these high prices. Don't be afraid to sell some. I wouldn't be selling at all, but be ready to trap these high prices. And volatile, whatever anybody says in here for a price could happen this year.
Next to Pete is Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Mike is on our air every Friday morning during our opening market report at 9:50 Central and during our closing market report at 2:06 Central Time. And Mike, good to see you again, sir, and an opening comment, please.
Good to see you, Dave, and on behalf of all the analysts, let's give Will Radio a big round of applause today.
Thank you.
I think that, you know, one of the guys here at this table, most of them, in fact, but especially Paul, has done a terrific job of keeping this thing going and bringing it up, and Dave and Todd have just done an enormous job. In my opinion, it's just amazing how many people are here today, and it's because of the work they've done, and it's really neat. It's really something to be proud of. There's an old saying, corn will go to $5 when pigs fly or Al Gore wins an Oscar on global warming. Now, I just made that up if you didn't know that. But it is kind of interesting because, you know, I love history. I always have. And I go back and I look at history a lot. And 5 or 6 years ago, I don't think Al Gore would have even been looked at on global warming, let alone win an Oscar. I don't think corn-based ethanol would have made the cover of U.S. News and World Report like it did a few weeks ago. But it's interesting. 5 years ago, crude oil was at $16. The dollar was 30% higher than what it is right now. MTBE was the main oxygen for blending, and the Dow Jones was 75% lower back in October of 2002, just 5 years ago. And we were in the throes of deflation. Remember that? Commodities were junk. Big funds and firms, investment banks were throwing out their commodity brokers and diversifying out and trying to get more into Wall Street and other things. But now 5 years down the road, Al Gore's getting an Academy Award. And we're sitting here with corn-based ethanol on the front of U.S. News and World Report. Why do I bring this up? Well, I think because in the travels of the last 3 months, both Chuck and I, in our travels and the meetings we have done, we've seen a real turn in terms of mindset and philosophy that ethanol, corn-based ethanol, is kind of a political football now. And you're seeing things like more corn demand equals less livestock feed. You're seeing earnings by major poultry producers being hit by their high corn prices. You're seeing more corn acres equals less conservation and fears that you're going to hurt your conservation practices because you're going to do all this corn on corn and no-till is going to go by the wayside because of high corn prices. And the high corn prices are also going to mean, you know, maybe less subsidies needed because of all this blending that you're going to do with ethanol. And the subsidies that are given to the blenders for the ethanol. So my point being is this next 30 days is very critical in my view, politically speaking, because of the mindset that has been growing the last few months. Because we're in a strong economy and we're not deflationary, people actually care about corn-based ethanol, and it's a wide swath of people around the financial world. And so we want to be real careful and listen very closely to what's said in Washington this next 30 days. And I would say the best thing we can do is work very hard with our political organizations to promote our mindset that everybody gets a subsidy in this world, nobody gets off cheap, and everybody has to pay a certain amount to have a cheap food policy and a cheap energy policy. 5 years ago, those two didn't compete with each other, but now we're getting to a point where the cheap food policy and the cheap energy policy by the United States government is starting to get a little bit contractionary, and minds are starting to flow where they're competing with each other. Appreciate you inviting us here today.
All right, let's have a few questions for our panels. I've listened carefully to what you had to say in your opening remarks. Paul, you said that it is a new era, and what we did in the past may no longer work in the future. So the question that I have for you is, given everything you know about the corn market, everything that you've listened to on the outside, macroeconomics, microeconomics, what rules can you begin to impart to these producers to help them understand the playing field?
Well, a couple of the old things will still work, and of course some of that is, of course, some seasonalities will work a great deal. And we did talk about with this higher price corn, we will see a tendency for basis prices to widen a little bit. And of course, transportation is still going to be a major tool that we'll use. So there is some things that have been predictable in the past that will also follow in the future. But I think the big thing is that in order to get the bigger bucks, you know, we like to think $4 corn out of the field is pretty good bucks, but in order to get that additional gravy, you are going to have to look at storage. You are going to have to look at markets and marketing the grain for what the end user wants. And, you know, timing of deliveries, actually going in and planting and doing a lot of things for harvesting. But let me just focus on what we're doing here in the commodity world. And, you know, one of the biggest mistakes that I think that some of my traders do is this concept to keep rolling puts up in the marketplace. You know, that's a wonderful idea, but it takes a lot of money. And when I looked over my past year's success ratio, about 75% of my customers made money last year, and they didn't lose money. And they demand more, and I think they're going to demand more from all the brokers and all the grain companies in order to get more help and help them with it. So I think help is a big factor here, too. And I think the other thing is that a guy just can't go in there and do some of the same old crazy things as far as, well, we'll just sell a corn today because it's a pretty day, or I'm going to buy a put because it's a rain is in the forecast. You've got to be a little bit more broader term and longer term, or they're going to absolutely, commodity funds and the traders in Chicago are just going to murder you. When we were at our company meeting, and we had a most beautiful party in all the world and up there, and they said, you know, Cooley, he said, we had about 20 traders in the wheat market that were very wealthy people, and they're no longer there anymore because they did a lot of dumb things, and they got on the wrong side of the market. So don't get on the wrong side of the market. Let the trend be your friend. Do a lot of things that are a little different and think and ask a lot of questions. And so I think those are some of the key things I want you to think about.
Paul, you probably would, at this point, have advocated not selling any new crop yet, correct?
Well, you know, at $4. It
does. You might want to sell some at $4, but a little bit.
Yeah.
Baby steps, as my friend Clayton over here was saying earlier. Mike, you were mentioning that the next 30 days are very critical for a lot of reasons. And we, while we're sitting here at this table today, I don't know what futures are at the moment, but this morning they were down pretty hard. They were down pretty hard this morning. And we were actually thinking last Friday as we were writing the Ag E-Letter that this might be a very critical week in the short term heading into March and into the planning intentions report for futures prices in terms of a break and or consolidation phase. So what I want to know from you, Mike, is over the next 30 days, what specifically are you going to keep your eye on, and what behavior might you do in the marketplace because of it?
Well, the biggest thing that we're pointing out to clients right now is that we're trying to make our marketing plan fairly simple. Between 390, our first overvalue level, and 470, our second overvalue level in these futures, we want to be scale-up sellers. We want to have some of that re-owned. We want to have some of that in bought puts, and we want to have a good crop insurance policy under us as well. The second overvalue level, Dave, of 470, we're trying to put that up against a July futures price back towards that 1996 high of 550. In other words, what we're trying to do is if we go from this recent high of 436 up to 470 D's futures, the trade's going to go from predicting a 500 to 600 million bushel carryover to well below a 500 million bushel carryover. They're going to, like Clayton was talking about, put that into the risk premium. The futures market is the guy that has to anticipate and put into or take out of the market what he thinks is being traded down the road, not what's happening right now. So I guess our mindset is if in the next 30 days, the rhetoric comes out that corn-based ethanol is not the right way to go. And the only reason I bring that up is because of the way the State of the Union address was released by President Bush. He talked very little about corn-based ethanol, and he was one of the greatest advocates a couple years ago about it. And so I think there is a climate change going on up in D.C. But if the rhetoric of corn-based ethanol is it's there to just get us by until the cellulosic gets developed, and we really don't need that much more corn-based ethanol above what we're currently producing, or we're not going to fund it with the subsidy, then that would make us more aggressive in our scale-up sell pattern. The other thing that the USDA numbers need to get updated off the baseline projections, those numbers that were released 2 weeks ago were updated as of the November WASD report. Those are 2 or 3 months old now, so we need to get some fresh numbers on the balance sheets, supply and demand. Will we get acreage numbers updates? It's probably not likely because you folks just sent your surveys back, and the crop insurance numbers that'll be put in by farmers on March 15th. That's USDA's not going to have much to go on either acres or crop insurance numbers. So I guess there's a wild hair that they could change acreage numbers day, but we're not looking for that.
Pete, you talked about the volatility, and you actually said, well, over how many days, over a month period, a 3 week period, that the market could go $1.50 higher to $1.50 lower. I'm not saying this next 3 week period, but what you were suggesting is high volatility in the market with big price swings. The question I have for you is this. There are folks that suggest the market has essentially two jobs to do at the moment. Ration old crop stocks. And to some degree, that's been happening by the higher prices that we've been seeing in the front end. And also, buy enough acres to rebuild ending stocks. And the question I have for you right after I give the prices will be, to what degree has the market accomplished both those goals? And by the way, here are the prices. Old crop corn is down 14.5. New crop corn is down 8.5. Old crop beans is down 15.5. And new crop beans is down 15.25. And I'm going to – is this your phone, Mike? Could you decipher the rest of this for me?
The Dow Jones is down 330 right now, with the S&P down 40.
Okay.
330.
Yeah.
330 down, in the stock market.
Shot.
All right.
I don't know if I remember your question after all that. What did we just talk about?
High volatility.
In all of these things, we talked about high volatility. Last week, at the end of the week, a lot of people were disappointed. Corn was up 4 cents for the week. It just was the last day down 8. Beans were up 13 or 14 for the week. They both made new contract highs for the week. Yesterday we were down a little, today we're down more, but it doesn't change the upward trend yet. We'd have to go with probably another 50 cents down for any of that to get changed. So high volatility. Have a plan. Where are you in your plan and marketing-wise? Depending on where you're at, you need to have more things put in place. Okay, his question was rationing
old crop stocks.
Old crop stocks.
Has that happened? And then secondly, have we bought enough acres to spring to build ending stocks,
okay.
Rebuild?
Rationing old stocks, we continue to use it at a big pace in corn. Our exports are still huge. Ethanol is still gobbling up a lot. So I don't think we've rationed much of anything yet. So that means we have to go higher if we're going to ration. Have we bought enough acres yet? I've got guys tell me until they get to the field, they don't know whether they're going to plant more corn or not. I think 10 million more acres coming because of that 13% is all we need for 10 million more. The 12 million I think is going to be hard, like somebody else said, but I think if we have 450 corn in April 15th, we're going to have 12 million more acres of corn. And if that happens, we'll have a 2 billion carryover, and we could drop like a rock. In the next month, we have the March 30th report. If those acres, they come in at 8 million more corn and only 4 million less of beans, corn will keep going higher, and beans will probably drop some. But those things we need to have where our marketing plan is. I don't think we've made any rationing yet in corn at all. And the other part was buying enough acres. I don't think anybody knows yet because we haven't rationed anything yet. I think we've got 8 to 10 million, and I'm at the 10 million end.
All right. And Clayton, you want to just take baby steps. That's what you told me, baby steps.
I want to be careful. And one, I just want to make one little quick case in point. Paul said,
all right,
if I could, you talked about the fellows that got blown out of the wheat pit. It's a perfect case in point, I think. The Dease wheat, of course, has expired now, but the March-July wheat spread was going for about 20-cent carry before everything took off in like the last half of September. That spread went to over a dollar inverse in about 3 weeks. There was no fundamental reason for that to happen. It was strictly because the funds came in there and bought the heck out of the front month wheat and left July in the dust. Well, as of last week, this thing went back. It exceeded the carry it had been at before that whole thing happened. So it went from a 20-cent carry to a dollar inverse to a 25-cent carry. And nothing really changed that dramatically fundamentally. So I think Paul and I are both saying the same thing. You just got to be careful and disciplined in these markets because you can be real right in the long run, but it doesn't matter if you can't survive the short run.
So this, after all, is futures. So I'm curious about December futures.
Okay.
And the question I have for you is, assuming a 12.2 to 12.4 billion bushel corn crop, what do you believe that the December's futures will be when they go off the board?
Okay.
Steve,
all right.
That's what you get for coming in late.
Yeah, and butting in too. Well, I'll keep my lips shut here. No, 12-2. Okay, regardless of how that has come about, whether, you know, yield versus, you know, the acreage increase and all that, I think if we had a 12-2 production, in our usage is something like, I would guess, around 12.4 would have a drawdown in stocks and would have a carryout somewhere around 500 million bushels. I mean, obviously, those are all real soft numbers. So to answer your question, if we had a carryout of 500 million bushels, in my opinion, there's little doubt would be lower than we are now, even though the carryover is a third less than what it is right now. But it goes right back to what I was saying in my opening comments. The uncertainty will be behind us at that point. We know we survived the growing season, and we know that sure would like to have a bigger carryover. Well, maybe farmers wouldn't, but America, from a security standpoint, would like to have a bigger carryover. And so 500 million, I think we would look at it as being adequate. I mean, after all, in 95, 96, we had barely over 300 million bushel carryover. And we survived. So that'd be my best guess. You want a price? No. I'd say if we're $4 or something now in new crop, I would guess would be $3.30 to $3.50. Summer would be my guess. I didn't the long term that baseline projection that came out a few weeks ago. There's no question in my mind we've raised the floor of what this stuff could go down to in the foreseeable future. I mean, they've got a carryover of, 500 million bushels, give or take, as far as the eye can see. And obviously that's not leaving much room for error.
And now I go to the other end. I go to Mike Zuzulo. I believe, Mike, at some other meetings that we've had, we've had this question in various forms, and there are some suggestions that these future might be, what, 280, 290? Might break $3?
Yeah, I think we were talking about closer to a 13 billion bushel crop, though. I think
we were talking a bigger crop.
Yeah, I think we were talking about if we get up to that 675 to 750 carryover level, that old, breakout point of 275, 272 used to be our resistance in December futures. That may have to be we may have to go down and check that level, Dave, just confirm that support still.
All right, we're going to do some questions. Who's got a corn question? You're all tired.
While they're looking for that,
Pete?
I got a comment on this last one. In 95, 96, July hit 550. Remember that? But you know what? December hit 397. We're at all-time highs in December right now. So when we look at these last two things about where we could be this fall, remember July already hit 450. Last week, July corn hit 451. So just think of the parameters of where we've been. Now, we do have a bigger floor underneath it, like we've said. we have better usage long term. We don't expect it to be a one-year flash.
So what are you saying about December futures, given what you just said?
December futures, because of the unknown through the summer, makes higher prices. Once you have the crop in, it's known, prices don't have to be as high.
I want to throw one in, too. My hunch is 380 on the harvest low areas, 420 on be on the higher side, and I think it's going to be pretty close to this $4 a bushel. I want to also mention, I want my three co-workers from ADM Grain to wave their hands. They're a big part of our company, and can you say wave back there?
Stand up, and we want to see your pretty pink shirts.
So I'm sorry I didn't say hi to you a little before, so thanks.
All right. So what I want to see Cooley in a pink jacket. So what I'm hearing, if I hear this right, is there is a lot of difference of opinion about where prices are going in this group.
Oh,
lot.
What a shock.
What a shock.
You need to listen to AM 580 every day.
Might do the acreage survey, say how many people.
I'll do that.
No, that's another one.
Well, that's fun. All right. We're going to do the acreage survey. And we'll do it this way. We'll do it as part of, as a percentage of your rotation. First off, just to get a baseline estimate of here, how many people in the room are, and raise your hands high, please, are in about a 50-50 corn-soybean rotation now. That's what you do. That's what you like to do. That's what you've done. Okay, keep those hands up. If you are considering increasing your corn acreage by at least 5%, let's see how I want to do this. Okay, I want to go the other way.
Everybody,
actually. All right. Here's how we do this. If you're going to increase your acreage by at least 5%, keep your hand up. If you're going to increase it by at least 5%, keep your hand up.
How about the people that are already over 50% corn? Participation.
Well, that's a different question.
Okay.
All right. If you're going to
increase this question,
don't confuse me.
If you're going to increase your corn acreage by at least 10%, 5 to 10%, keep your hand up. If you're going to increase your corn acreage by at least 10 to 15%, keep your hand up. 15 to 20? 20 to 25? Okay. Oh, 25 to 30. 100% corn. No. Okay. So that's one way of asking the question. Now, the other way, Pete, is?
No matter how much you're growing now, how many are going to grow 10% more corn next year?
You're going to grow at least 10% more corn next year.
How about 15%?
15% more corn.
Todd's even taking their pictures this year, Dave.
We need to send that picture down to Chicago, I think. All right. Questions for our panel?
How did they come up with a number? This March 30th magic number that we need.
How does this magic number happen on March 30th? March 31st.
And until the weather forecasts come out from WILL the next day.
What'd you give up?
Well, it's based upon your surveys, and that's what we're going to send these pictures up to Washington and match them up with your surveys, so you better be telling the truth.
wanted to throw another point onto this, and I'm going to steal some of Dan Zwicker's thunder that he gave at a meeting over in Decatur, that one of the things that definitely everybody is talking about, in order to get this 10 to 12 million acres, the weather planning is going to be perfect. And And that's not only perfect in Des Moines and Cedar Rapids, that's in Indianapolis and Columbus, Ohio, and Chicago to Minneapolis. So, you know, it is a perfect weather deal, and that's going to have a big influence on. And I think that, you know, your point and question is very worthwhile and has everybody in the industry scratching their head, because it is so unusual to see this kind of an acreage increase being talked about.
We have time for one or two more questions. Yes, sir. What's wrong? Is it a good thought to match up all your cash inputs and match them up with December sales today?
That's called a marketing plan, and if you're happy with knowing what the cost is per acre, per bushel, however you figure it, and then selling it at a higher price than that, more power to you, because that's called a marketing plan. And I would agree with you 100%. If you want to sell it all there and make that amount of money, go right ahead and do it. If you want to gamble some and have puts in place for the downside or calls in place for the upside or whatever, you can try to get more. But sometimes that's called greed, too. But that's a marketing plan. When you know what your cost is and you get above it, sell some, sell your percentage that you want to, you go for it.
Any last questions? Going once? Going twice? Yes, sir. Should we not be expecting some inflation at some point, maybe the third, fourth quarter of 2007, given what Dan was talking about this morning? Mike.
Yeah, I think that's a real good point. I think that goes back to the crude oil markets. You know, 10 years ago, we had to retrain ourselves that maybe the short crop, long tail is not the way to market, because how fast markets fall. 96 and 2004 were perfect examples of that. 2 or 3 years ago, we had to learn about the funds and how they can be our buddy and how they can be really a beast to us, too. Now we're having to realize that the crude oil market, and maybe in the future the sugar market, is going to be a leading indicator to our corn prices, that because Brazil's the cheapest cost producer of sugar-based ethanol, that if their prices go up, corn is likely to be substituted or used more, and there's less imports coming in the United States of sugar-based ethanol. So we're relearning. But, yeah, the inflationary issue is key, and that was part of today's market. And the downside was there's a big rumor out there that the Chinese stock market is going to see some curtailment of the government, that they're going to slow down their economy, and that forces out your liquidity. And that's where you've got the fundamental aspects of your inputs and the fundamental aspects of your higher diesel prices, but you've also got the funds trading the exact same line of thought. Low interest rates, high crude oil prices means go into emerging markets and go into commodities. And so you've got a fund sector that's out there, and you've got the fundamentals out there too. And that's what's so hard to distinguish in this go-around versus 1996.
I think other things to look at in inflation, and I think we're in inflationary period, is look at natural gas heating costs, look at electricity, look at your costs, and everything that we pay for every day has all got something to do with how we got that to market and what we're going to have to pay for it. So I think we could easily see more inflation, and that's why this morning they talked about not having interest rate cuts.
You know, for the last 6 months, 2 years, 3 years, we've been hearing about, bad China with their cheap, you know, currency and, you know, a lot of ta-ta, and they're taking advantage of us, and it's really hurting our U.S. economy. You know, here they up and raise their interest rates, and our stock market goes down 330 points. If that's what we wanted them to do, it ought to be up 330 points. But my point on the energy is that the energy is a big part of our production agriculture, and thank goodness, because if we were back in the old days, we'd be still suffering with some awful cheap corn today.
Yeah, I would like to add one quick comment to it. You talked about inflation. I guess I have a little bit of a different viewpoint here on that. There are very high inflationary expectations right now, for the most part out there on Wall Street and I think the economists in general. Right or wrong, I think the expectation is for inflation, to be pretty high. And that can just change so quickly, as evidenced slightly by what happened today, for one thing. I'm a firm believer that our government is doing everything they can to inflate. And I didn't say that wrong. I think they are trying to cause inflation as much as they can in our economy, in spite of their protestations that they're trying to fight inflation. And I think there's no doubt about that. And that given the U.S. is the biggest debtor nation in the world, we have no choice but to try to inflate our way out of it. If God help us, if we ever do have deflation, because inflation is really our salvation. So. An awful lot of expectations already built in for inflation, and I think it could very easily fall short of what those expectations are. So I'd be very cautious about assuming that prices are going to go higher and higher due to inflation.
Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities, Paul Cooley, ADM Investor Services, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, and Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities. Give these people a round of applause, please.